This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to you. Happy football. Football Friday with a lot of baseball. That's what it is today.
Foosball Friday.
It is a melange.
In Europe, they call baseball football, I'm told.
They do. Everything's
true.
Football
That's
over
true.
There.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Like, well, you know, the rest of the world calls, when people talk about football, it's actually baseball. That's what they say. Some snobby little hipster in some pub on a Saturday morning when you walk in and you're just trying to drink. And they're like, well, actually, we're watching football.
Right.
What the rest of the world calls football, which is baseball.
Right. Yeah. There's a golf tournament on TV. That's what we call football up there. Golf.
Yeah. Seriously, though, kids listening. There's nothing more annoying than the person that says, you know, in the rest of the world, soccer is actually called football.
Yes.
Just don't ever be that person.
No,
don't,
no.
Because everybody knows that.
Right.
Like, you're not, it's true. Yes, that's true. Yeah. And everybody knows it. Yeah. You're not breaking news to anybody. You're just being a douche, okay?
Yes.
So don't say it.
Yeah.
Don't ever catch yourself saying
don't
that.
Don't do that. And if you see someone do that, slap them. You have license to slap. Payne and Pendergast license to slap them. Seth, I'm jacked, man.
Sean,
game six.
Sean said
what?
That. Yes. Game six.
Game six.
A game in which Luis Garcia will hopefully knock down his 40.5 ERA in the playoffs here somewhat and get after it. But luckily, he's facing Uvaldi, the pitcher.
Nathan Uvaldi, has his name.
Uvaldi. In Europe, he's called Football Uvalde. Football Uvalde has a 10.5 ERA in this playoffs.
That's
or in
right.
this series, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that came on the strength of one inning, but we'll take it. It was a really important inning. It was the most important inning in this series right now in retrospect, the ninth inning of Game 4. I think you could submit that the Astros won Game 4 and Game 5 in that ninth inning of Game 4 because of the momentum they carried into Game 5. This is going to be fun, man. A home closeout game six, and it will be Luis Garcia. Luis Garcia, who is dealing with some sort of knee issue in game two. I don't know. I mean, I guess Dusty Baker did the Mr. Miyagi thing where he rubs his hands together and puts his hands on Luis Garcia's knee because Luis Garcia said yesterday when he met with the media via Zoom, the knee feels good.
I mean, my knee's doing really good right now. I feel really good, like normal, and you know, some adjustment, like mechanic, and nothing. Something like big, but it's okay. Nothing.
Okay, so nothing to see here, Seth. Luis Garcia, the knee, which was the reason he gave up five earned runs in one inning 4 days ago. All good now. The knee's fine.
Luis Garcia, who's in that position, you know, where he's probably still got that scrappy underdog mentality, where you don't want to tell anybody when you're injured because you don't want to lose your opportunity. And now this might have been his first experience really realizing and understanding, like, oh, these little things actually can clear up with these 18 athletic trainers and physical therapists we have on staff.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of just getting cleaned up and get some ultrasound and some stim on there. And off you go to win game six of the World Series, the ALCS.
I'm going to assume that the medical people saw stuff that they like in whatever imaging they did on Garcia's knee because it's game six of the ALCS. Like, Luis Garcia has been solid enough this year. He's going to get a bunch of Rookie of the Year votes. But a banged-up Luis Garcia, this ain't Verlander. You know what I mean? Like, a banged-up Luis Garcia is not somebody you send out in a game like this, especially on the heels of what he did or didn't do in Game 2. So I'm trusting the team that – and I'm trusting more than anything, I'm trusting Luis Garcia, that he's being honest with how he feels with how the knee feels? Because I think you and I both, when we were kind of trying to prognosticate a little bit yesterday on what Game 6 might look like, I think you and I both thought that it would be some permutation of Odorizzi and Christian Javier. And we may see both of those guys in this game. We did in Game 2. We saw Odorizzi very, very quickly.
And Javier, I mean, it's not like Javier is completely rested or anything, but obviously can give you you don't expect him to go four innings or anything. Garcia, we just didn't know. Garcia was like a minor version of Lance McCullers, where right now you just have no idea exactly what they might get out of Lance McCullers. You know, the other big injury one that I'm starting to worry about is Jake Myers, just because it seems like he's been hovering along, might be available, but not quite yet. And sometimes, again, he's another young player that maybe, as a player, it's not like you're consciously lying to the trainers. It's that you're lying to yourself. And you're telling yourself, no, I'm fine. It's really not that big a deal. And so consequently, that's what you end up telling everybody else. But it's not true. You're eager to be out there, and you don't want to let people down. So I hope Jake Myers really is something that's just almost quite there and just needs to get over that little hump.
Yeah, Dusty said yesterday about Myers that he'd be available as a pinch runner, and I think if they could do it over again, Jake Myers probably would not be on the roster for this series. And I think it has not been an issue, Seth, because none of these games have been close. You know what I mean? Other than Game 1, which was 5-4, the Red Sox in Games 2 and 3 just jumped on the Astros early. Those games were never close. And then I guess Game 4 was close until the very end, but there was never a point in that game where you needed that extra roster spot, nor was there that point in Game 5. So it hasn't been exposed necessarily, but if I had to guess, they would probably not put him on the roster.
Right, and especially because he had the pre-existing injury, you can't replace him on the roster either.
Right,
you know, if a guy gets an injury during the series, you can replace him with somebody. Then that guy that gets replaced isn't available the next series, but... But you can't even do that with Jake Myers right now, so it puts you in a little bit of a pickle. Yeah. The injury, juggling the injuries for the rosters, obviously is difficult, but it's causing me more stress even than like trying to juggle relievers in the normal variety. Except, Sean, this is where I told you when I was watching the game the other night. This is where this part of it excites me. Uvaldi, every time they showed Uvaldi in the dugout, I don't know if he was doing this subconsciously or if it's just something he does, but he's rubbing his shoulder underneath his jacket with his hand. So he just pitched on what, Tuesday? He pitched on Tuesday, pitched 20-some pitches on Tuesday. We'll see. We'll see how long Uvaldi can last. If you knock Uvaldi out early, this bullpen that the Red Sox feel pretty good about, because basically – the Red Sox got knocked around so bad by the Astros that they didn't have to tax any of the relievers that they really care about. Right. Then they had the rest day. So they feel pretty good going into this game, unless Uvaldi gets knocked out of the game early.
Yeah. They got to jump on him early and keep that momentum going. I do not want to – I don't need a Game 7 on Saturday. I'd really like to relax on Saturday night. So Astros, if you can take care of it tonight in Game 6, that would be awesome. Luis Garcia at home, 2.39 ERA. So hopefully healthy.
The other thing that I had said jokingly the other day, though, Sean, that's about to come true, is that the silver lining in Garcia, Urquidy, and Framber being so bad early on is that the Red Sox haven't really seen much of them. So like the Red Sox in knocking the crap out of them early really didn't get a good look at him. They didn't get multiple times through the order. So as long as Garcia's knee is actually straight, he can kind of jump on him now.
I
like it.
I like that angle. We can take pleasure in their crappy performances in games 1, 2, and 3 now that they're up 3-2. Like, oh, we can
all
have
just setting him up.
We can all have a big laugh about it now that the Astros are in a closeout game tonight. It's all good, Luis. Good for you for sucking and setting them up. It's all just a big game of chess is all that is. You sucked in game 2 so that you could come back and dominate in game 6. It's been like a tale of two series. Like I think of all the guys that frightened the hell out of me through the first two or three games with the Reds, like Kike Hernandez, I felt like they weren't going to get him out for the first three games. And now he's thankfully turned back into Kike Hernandez again.
Kike Hernandez is 1 of 9 in his last two games.
Yeah. He sucks again. It's great.
Hunter Renfro's 1 for 14 in the series. He's struck out 7 times. So, meanwhile, I won't even talk about the streaks that some of the Astros are on. We'll talk about that at the end of this series.
Okay.
I'm going to go into Sean. I know I told you the other day that everybody who's superstitious about anything in baseball is an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Call me an imbecile because I'm it gets to game six and I get superstitious.
Basically,
I don't want to be
called me an idiot because I'm superstitious.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, sure. But that's neither here nor there, Sean. At this point, it's all hands on deck, and we can let bygones be bygones and worry about other things later.
All right.
I don't want to be the guy that jinxes a team or a streak or anything.
Yeah,
just on the off chance that any of that is valid.
People like your take on everybody calling soccer football everywhere else. That's got of all the things you've said in the open, that's gotten the most run on the text page.
Is that what resonated with people?
Apparently, evidently, that's the content people are here for. Is your takes
this is
on
the problem?
Football.
Yeah. Like when somebody says, you know, in the rest of the world, people football is actually soccer, or however they phrase it.
Yeah.
It's they're not just being kind of snooty and dismissive of the game of American football. They are assuming that you're an idiot, right? Yeah. Because like because you've heard it 400,000 times in your life by the time you're in your 20s.
Yep.
So yeah, that person's almost by definition somebody you should never talk to again.
Indeed.
If they bring that up, yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It's a football Friday. Texans have the Cardinals on Sunday. 3:25 kick right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I'll have Texans countdown a little later than normal. 12:25 is when we'll get things started. So we get to sleep in on Sunday, Seth. That's a good deal. So J.J. Watt met with the media yesterday, met with the Houston media over Zoom. He had some interesting things to say. And as I was listening, I'm like, J.J. Watt kind of feels like a Texan season ticket holder right now. He'll explain next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I know there's a long way to go in this season, but at this stage in your career, to be 6-0, tell me how special it is to be a part of something like this.
It's great. It's why I'm here, to win football games. I'm having a lot of fun with these guys. We got great chemistry, great camaraderie. We're having a lot of fun, but the best part about it is I know that when we go back to work this week, it's going to be turn the page and go back to work, and that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Congrats, JJ. Thanks.
Thank you. Go Cards.
Oh, I hated that last part. Go Cards. He's doing the Russell Wilson thing at the end of his little interviews there on TV. You know, Russell Wilson. Go Hawks. At the end of everything. Go Hawks. Probably after sex with his wife. Go Hawks afterwards. Everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Go Cards. So that was JJ Watt following their win over Cleveland this past weekend. Of course, it's Cardinals and it's Texans on Sunday here on Sports Radio 610, 3:25 kick. JJ met with the Houston media yesterday over Zoom, so he got to see some of his old friends. We'll have an exchange with John McClain here in just a minute. We always get a good McClain moment out of any JJ Watt press conference. I thought this was maybe the most poignant thing that he said in the Zoom call yesterday, Seth, because they asked him, and this is what I think what'll hit home with Texan fans, because I think Texan fans are feeling a lot like JJ feels in this clip. He was asked, hey, is it weird scouting your old teammates and scouting your old team? Here's what JJ had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I had to use the scouting report. I mean, there's so many guys that I don't know. I mean, it's just a pure numbers game. Like, there's just, when you turn on the tape, I mean, I think there's two, maybe three, maybe four guys on the offense, the starting offense that were there last year. Other than that, they're all brand new guys that I obviously don't have any experience with. So I'm using the scouting report. I'm watching the film just like everything. And it's weird. You know, it's weird to turn on the tape and see the Texans logo in the middle of the field and watch games at NRG from the other perspective. But at the same time, it's a football game. And you go out there and you play the game. So I'm watching on film just like everybody else. And I'm breaking it down and doing my normal weekly routine, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity. Obviously, they haven't had the level of success that they're looking for, but they still fight and they still work, and Davis gets the ball out of his hands quick, and they can run the ball with their running backs, so it's a good opportunity and a good challenge for us. Mm.
Can they run the ball, JJ? Are you sure? Which film have you been watching? The last I checked, running the football, not really a key skill with this team.
They've had a couple games this year where they ran better than you expected.
You say so. That's fine.
Last week and in week one.
Okay.
The Jaguars, and then last week as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I guess I'm not completely buying. I think he exaggerated a little bit when he said there's only a few guys that he even recognizes over there. Although on the offensive line, with Laremy Tunsil out, it's gotten a lot closer to that. He probably barely even he might not know. Do you think he knows Charlie Heck's name, or do you think he kind of do you think he called him bro? Did he get to know Charlie Heck, or did he call him bro?
We'll find out, because McClain asked him about Charlie Heck, and we'll hear that in just a second.
Okay,
as he was saying that, Seth, I'm kind of going through my head. I'm like, okay, Brandon Cooks was on the team last year. Jordan Akins was on the team last year. I can't even count Titus Howard because he's not playing right tackle. He's playing left guard. He may as well be somebody different. Sharping, but even Sharping lost his starting job. Yeah, I mean, look, and David Johnson. Like, it's not the number of guys that are still there.
It's
the guys that are still there. You know what I mean?
Like, it's the guy. Well, like, does he actually take a lot of them seriously?
Right.
Like,
right.
Does he take Max Sharping seriously? Does
Correct.
He take Titus Howard, the guard, seriously?
Yes.
And I will say, I'm joking about Charlie Heck, except that last year, because of the COVID restrictions, you heard that from a lot of players and coaches talking about just how it was hard to get to know people. You know, you didn't even really see guys' faces because everything was in your meeting in separate groups and doing a lot of meetings via Zoom. So I think it's safe to say that, yeah, a lot of the guys that have gotten there in the last couple years, JJ probably doesn't really know all that well at
right.
all. They were rookies 2 years ago, then they were barely talking to each other last year. So this is, it probably feels very foreign. And that's, you know, that probably adds to the distance that JJ might feel from this team, because last year was such a lost season, and then there was so much less contact between players and teammates than there typically is. You know what goes on, Sean, in companies, they're finding out now during COVID, was a lot of siloing.
Yeah.
Like, where people would they'd form closer bonds with the people that you're already close to, but not necessarily have all these casual bonds through an organization or a company.
Yeah, it's
and
bad.
I think football, it was the same way.
Yeah.
I think, like, the D-line was probably super tight because those are the only guys you're allowed to talk to.
Yeah, it's not.
And you wouldn't really get to – no hanging out in the cafeteria like there usually
yep,
is.
Yep, yep. And that's not a way to go about things. Here was J.J. was asked by John McClain about, hey, what's your scouting report on Max Sharping and Charlie Heck on that right side of the Texans offensive line?
Charlie Heck and Max Sharping, you know them well. You'll be going against them. What is your scouting report based on what you've seen now compared to last year?
I can't tell you that, John. Why would I come on here and give you everything that I'm going to do in the game and what I see and how I do? I think they're great guys. I enjoyed my time great with them. I think they've worked extremely hard, and I'm looking forward to playing against them on Sunday.
See, there you go, Seth. They were best friends. That's what I heard. JJ was best friends with Max Sharping and Charlie Heck. They were all one
yeah.
big happy family in the 2 years he was with those guys.
He
wasn't giving up anything to John. Hey, give me the scouting report on the two guys you're going to be going against this weekend. I would say the quote that from JJ that got the most run yesterday was actually an answer where he only said two words. Okay, here's an exchange with Sarah Barshop. Seth, take a listen to this. What are we to read into JJ's lack of talkativeness when Sarah Barshop asked why he left the Texans?
JJ, when you were making your decision this offseason, because you had a new coaching staff, did you get a sense that there would be this much turnover and maybe this is what the Texans season would like look like this year?
Yeah.
Is that one of the reasons you decided to go somewhere else?
Yeah.
right, Seth. Like, translate.
This is going to be a miserable situation yet again, and I don't want to be here for everything. You guys can deduce for yourselves exactly why I think it's miserable.
Well, that's what I want to do. I want to deduce. Like, this is a guy who gives 45-second answers on the regular, and he gave two words.
Remember last year he had said before the trade deadline that he didn't want us to be around for a rebuild, or he kind of called his shot way beforehand, and I think that it's probably best for all parties involved that JJ wasn't around for a rebuild.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it would have ended up, as much as anybody might want to say, well, JJ should want to stick around. No, you be honest with yourself. You would have thought that JJ's contract was an albatross and a lost cause on a team that was losing anyway. People would have started criticizing JJ's lack of, you know, conventional productivity or how many sacks he has or what have you. The defense still would have been bad because one player does not a great defense make, and it would have gotten ugly. So I think that, he didn't want to be around for a rebuild.
Dude.
And he probably, and like he'd already established, there was no reason to feel really any personal loyalty to anybody on this staff, right? Like anybody that had brought him in or that he cared about or anything like that, those guys are all gone.
Can you imagine if he was here? Can you imagine the questions he'd be getting asked? Like, imagine if JJ were here with all this stuff going on with Deshaun. You know what I mean? Like, it is JJ was getting angry in the second half of last season having to answer questions about guys putting effort in at practice. Can you imagine him getting asked the question? Now, eventually the Deshaun questions would have subsided. They all have, although they may bubble back up in the next week or so with the trade deadline coming up. But plunking JJ down into this ecosystem with a new coaching staff, with a quarterback who he was very fond of as a teammate, getting sued by 22 women. Oh, my God. It would have great theater, but I would have felt bad for JJ personally. Speaking of Deshaun Watson trade rumors heating up. We glossed right over, to me, the most unbelievable part of the story yesterday. We shall not gloss over it anymore. We'll tell you what it is next.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the one thing yesterday when we were talking about Deshaun Watson, and of course the Deshaun Watson trade rumors are back in our lives, reports by both John McClain and Mark Berman earlier this week that the two sides are working towards, the two sides being the Texans and the Dolphins, are working towards a trade for Deshaun Watson. Could happen this week. If it's going to happen this week, it better happen soon. It's Friday. But it could happen before the trade deadline, which is November 2nd. So it's a week from Tuesday. So we're about 11 days away, if my count is right, from the trade deadline. So we'll see what happens. Until the trade deadline gets here and Deshaun Watson is still a Texan, this will be a topic. But the one thing that would grease the skids for an imminent trade would be the Dolphins' ability to use Deshaun Watson this season. And John McClain, when he was on with Clint Sterner in the show on Wednesday, the day the rumors popped up, had this to say about Deshaun Watson and the possibility, likelihood, maybe lack thereof, of him being suspended.
One thing Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner, would want to know from Roger Goodell, is he going to be suspended? And because I'm hearing, and I don't know this is true, and I didn't write it, is that he won't be suspended, and there's a good chance he'll be traded. He'll be playing against the Texans on November the 7th in Miami.
I started thinking about this yesterday, Seth. I was kind of going back through what we talked about on the show and just in listening to the other shows on the station and kind of going back through, and I almost feel like in looking at it, that we got so caught up in, wow, this trade might happen. What might it look like? Will they still get three first-round picks? I hope Nick Caserio doesn't settle for anything less than that, blah, blah, blah. The whole thing about Deshaun not getting suspended, and it just like hit me right between the eyes, like, holy crap, are you telling me, wait a second, he might not get suspended? Like, I've been operating under the assumption that he's going to get at least a slap on the wrist from the NFL. Let me just real quick, before I get your thoughts on this, I texted John yesterday, and because that was the only mention during that interview of Deshaun not being suspended. And I said, John, when you said you're hearing the NFL isn't going to suspend Watson, do you mean they won't be suspending him anytime soon or that they won't be suspending him at all, like ever? And he said, I've heard he won't be suspended, but that can always change. Goodell already could have suspended him. So that was John's reply. So, I mean, I guess anything can change.
There's no way he doesn't get suspended eventually.
Okay.
There's absolutely zero chance he doesn't get suspended eventually.
Okay.
Because, like Goodell has already established that even just bringing shame on the shield. Remember when he used to use that annoying phrase?
Yes.
Like, you've dishonored the shield. Like, whatever it might be. He's done it already by virtue of, at the very least, his counsel has admitted to consensual sexual activity with a massage therapist in such a way that it sounds and looks a lot like they were claiming that it was like prostitution, basically. At least it's reasonable to assume that's what they were talking about. And it just, I would say there's absolutely no way he doesn't get suspended. Maybe it's a slap on the wrist. Maybe it's two games. But regardless of whether he's found, whether they press charges, whether he's found liable or not liable. So I think that the problem for Goodell is that because there's so little precedent for anything like this, and because if Deshaun is entrenched and refuses to settle, and they don't do anything to keep this thing, to move this thing along and resolve it quickly, then it could take like 2 years. So do you get... So then Goodell's put in a position where he basically ends up suspending somebody for 2 years for something that hasn't been proven yet or not. And then what happens if Deshaun is found completely not guilty, what have you? It puts the NFL in a bind. And I think that's why there's this peddling of treading of water right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, and I think this may play into the Goodell part of this, Seth, is there's not been really much mention at all. Like, most of the mention has been about Watson and the possibility of a trade and why the Dolphins make sense and how urgent are the Dolphins with this, et cetera. To my knowledge, the police investigation is still open. You know what I mean? Like, that's
right.
That's
exactly what, and this is what's so freaking annoying about all of this. And it wasn't John giving that report. It was just John saying what he's read. You got all these ass clowns who have zero clue what's actually going on in the legal process, because nobody does. And you'll talk to lawyers and judges in Houston who say that, look, with Busby and Harden, like, anything is in play. Usually, most attorneys like Busby at this point would want to settle, but Busby has a history of taking stuff to trial that other attorneys would want to settle. Like, Busby has a history of really pushing the envelope and getting larger rewards and almost setting the precedent for newer, larger rewards in specific types of cases. So when some ass clown from New York or Miami or Los Angeles tries to act like they know what's going to happen in the Houston legal system, they're just completely fabricating stuff. They're making it up. They don't know. And I'm going to tell you another thing. I think there's other times where writers are genuinely reporting what somebody close to the situation has told them. This is what you have to remember. The people close to the situation are ass clowns themselves. In one case, maybe much more literally than I'm even saying. But they don't themselves know how to handle this situation or what's going to happen. Look at what happened with the way Deshaun's representation botched so many things early on in his agency. Just casually dismissing Ashley Solis's complaints, just either not believing or maybe believing too much of what various people were saying. These guys don't have a clue. They're idiots themselves. So you cannot have a congregation of morons informing you about what's going to happen when those morons got themselves into this whole fix anyway. Nobody knows anything. It's very frustrating.
Okay, so whereas yesterday we were going, well, Berman's reporting this, then there's got to be something to it. As you and I just sit here and talk through the suspension part of this, where I'm with you, I think he's going to get suspended in some... I can't just change my mind that he's not going to get at least a slap on the wrist in all this, you know, like with Deshaun. Like, so I can't just ignore that. And, you know, the trade deadline being an actual deadline, this is a logical time for the rumor mill to start churning again on Deshaun. Somebody DM'd me yesterday, a couple people DM'd me, like, what do you think is going on with this Deshaun stuff? Do you think it's going to happen? And the conclusion I came to yesterday after kind of sifting through the fact that I think he's still going to get suspended, and the HPD stuff still being open, which we kind of completely ignored yesterday, that the HPD investigation is still open because we got so swept up in the fact that there seem to be credible reports that a trade could happen. My answer to these people on Twitter, on DM, was I'll believe it when I see it. That's where I am right now. I will believe it when I see it. I have gone back to the side of I don't think something's happening before the trade deadline.
Right. I think that people have told Berman that something's going to happen before the trade deadline. But again, I'll go back to what I've believed for a long time now is that even the people on either side of any of these negotiations either aren't respecting or understanding just how complex all of this is and just how unpredictable all of it is, or when they leak information, they're trying to get something to happen. Because that's the other thing about this whole... I have a hard time understanding why anybody close to this negotiation would leak out the information if things look like they're actually going to go through. Like, there's no reason to leak the information right now unless there's a hitch in the process some way. Like usually when these trade matters are leaked, it's by somebody that actually has some say in the matter.
Yeah.
And that's why like there's so many discussions about trades that never see the light of day. It's almost remarkable when one is, I don't know what the ratio would be, but for however many trade discussions there are between general managers, it's relatively rare that there's ever a leak about it. So yeah, the fact that there was a leak and that somebody's trying to get that out there makes me wonder about just how potentially possible this is. The one thing that also the ass clowns don't report, and it's shocking, when you'll read like a 1,000-word article on the matter talking about how Caserio has botched it or somebody else has handled this poorly, these people won't mention Deshaun's no-trade clause. Like, and the reason that this is gummed up even worse is because Jack Easterby gave Deshaun Watson a no-trade clause back in August, and two Augusts ago, and because
no, last
of that,
year it was pool, a year ago.
the pool of people that can trade for Deshaun Watson is very small. It might be as small as one.
Yeah.
So Miami sits with a whole lot of leverage because, look, I got to think that in Miami they know, they got to know. Well, maybe they don't. But they got to know that it's not like Deshaun's going to walk onto that pathetic roster and all of a sudden turn everything around. Sean, anybody who trades for Deshaun Watson right now and pays actual, like, what his football value is worth, let's say if there weren't all this other stuff overhanging it, all they're doing is trading for the right to become the 2020 Houston Texans.
Absolutely.
They're trading for the right to have Deshaun Watson, no first-round picks, and a paltry smattering of other quality players who might just leave in free agency soon anyway. So it's there's so many more reasons for this not to go through that, yeah, I'm with you. I'm very skeptical.
With one key difference, they, unlike the 2020 Houston Texans, they will be paying Deshaun Watson up to $40 million a year. Like the Texans did what they did in 2020 with Deshaun still on his rookie contract. So now you've assembled a roster and put yourself in a draft capital situation where you're actually paying top of market for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, look, Sean, I have great respect for reporters. It's a really hard job to do. A lot of times nobody gets more crap than when a reporter reports something accurately, because people love to kill the messenger. If it's news they don't want to hear, then they love to kill the messenger. I don't know why reporters would ever report that something is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just because it falls through so often, and that's what I just don't get. Because and especially it leaves you open to just being manipulated by agents or by team personnel or what have you. So to predict that something's going to happen, all of a sudden that puts you in the prognostication business, not the reporting business.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody close to the situation is optimistic that something's going to happen, then that's something to get altogether different. But, we've got less than 2 weeks now. We've got a week and a half before the trade deadline. And I just have a hard time seeing how it's... I hope it's wrong. Just as a Texans fan, purely from the football side of things, I want all of this to be over. It won't be over on the legal and side of things, obviously, and I don't mean to diminish that at all, but as a football fan, I just want this part of it to be over.
Yeah, we got a lot of people texting in about this. You can text 713-572-4610. Someone says here, the leak was to get some teams to make a last-ditch effort to drive up the price, and that may very well be. Again, I'll go back to what Seth said. Ultimately, you could have a team come in with a great offer for the Texans for Deshaun Watson. If Deshaun doesn't want to go there, he just says, I don't want to go there. I want to go to Miami. So it may not matter. And I say that because Aaron Reese of The Athletic reported that there have been some discussions with both the Panthers and the Eagles over the last several days about Deshaun Watson. It doesn't sound like it's anything that really went anywhere. In fact, the Panthers not only have said that they're out on Deshaun Watson, Matt Rhule was asked about it in his press conference earlier this week, and he pushed his chips back into the middle of the table on Sam Darnold in that press conference. I don't think a big surprise. But, yeah, I mean, there's other discussions going on with other teams, but Seth, I thought, laid it out pretty clearly there. Deshaun's got a lot of control in this matter, unfortunately. All right, 713-572-4610, Payne and Pendergast.
That is the no-trade clause is just huge. Wait, one of our listeners asked a question, Sean, that was interesting. And at first I kind of scoffed at it, but I would love to have some lawyers weigh in on it. But basically he had said, hey, look, if somebody asks for a no-trade clause, you know, meaning that they don't want to be traded away except without input, but then they ask for a trade, is there any possible way to say, like, okay, well, that negates your no-trade clause? Like,
ooh.
And at first I thought, like, no, because it's not written into the contract. But I don't know. Maybe there's some kind of legal precedent for that. They're like, can you ask for a no-trade clause and then 6 months later say, like, but I really would like to be traded,
that's
but only if but I guess you've already set the terms. My first instinct was like, well, you've already set the terms. It's in the contract. So even if unless there's a contingency in there that says, hey, unless the player acts for the trade, then he has the right to refuse a trade.
You know my go-to in these situations, Seth. You know what I call? Entrapment. Deshaun entrapped the Texans.
Did he? Yes.
He put
yes.
the no-trade clause in and then 6 months later asked for a trade. Entrapment.
Was the no-trade clause actually asked for in good faith, or was this all part of a plan to get himself out of here with a contract in tow already?
Okay, now I know you're joking, but that's kind of interesting.
I'm not completely joking because lawyers can do some pretty funky stuff.
Well, no, I think it's fair to ask, given the timing of Deshaun signing that contract. He signed the contract Labor Day weekend of 2020. DeAndre Hopkins had already been traded. Jack Easterby had been in the building for over a year. Deshaun at least had, from inside the building, a look at what direction the roster was kind of going in. And Deshaun's not a football dummy. You know, he can look around and go, you know what? This defense is not what it was a couple of years ago when we had Clowney and we had Tyrann Mathieu and we, you know, Whitney Mercilus was not carrying a spare tire around his midsection. That Deshaun might have signed that deal in September, knowing full well, like, I may not be long for this world. This is not going in the direction. J.J. Watt is a year older. All those things. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to think that Deshaun put that no-trade clause in there, knowing that there could be a trade demand coming down. It wasn't all puppy dogs and ice cream when he put pen to paper. I mean, they were 6 months removed from trading his number one wide receiver and very good Clemson friend, DeAndre Hopkins. I know you're joking around, but I think it's in the realm of possibility that Deshaun had that in there, knowing that it could happen.
Yeah, I guess. Well, no, I'm not joking around.
Oh, okay,
I get in trouble. I joke around too much, and people can't ever. It seems like the chances are minuscule that would be possible.
Yeah.
But there might be some kind of and you know what Deshaun is, Sean. The thing is, if a lawyer thinks that there's a 1% chance of something happening, and he can bill hours arguing for it, then they're going to bill hours arguing for it. The counter argument, if I were Deshaun's people, I would say that, hey, I built two cheesesteak restaurants. Why would I wouldn't plan on leaving if I was building to which I would reply, aha, because you knew that you were going to be tested on this, and that's why you built the cheesesteak
restaurants. The cheesesteak restaurants are a pittance in your empire that you can use as subterfuge.
It's getting to the point now where I'm almost worried when an athlete starts a restaurant. Look at James Harden. He started that damn 13 restaurant.
It's a sign that they're leaving.
Is it still running?
Apparently it's very good. I've read good reviews on it. Yeah, apparently it's very, very good. I'd actually like to go there sometime.
Supposedly, some people believe that James Harden eventually is destined to end up back in Houston.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I want that. I don't know that I want to bring James. We got a nice young core that's going to go win 18 games this year and go get some more good young players next year. James can go do his thing. And Seth, don't stop joking around. Just because you used a jokey tone, so I thought you were joking about the Deshaun contract. Your jokiness is part of your part of your persona.
I'm going to be honest with you. When the guy presented that to me, my first instinct really was like, well, no, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. But given the way the attorneys can work these things, I don't know. Maybe there is some recourse there for the Texans somewhere along the way. I don't know.
Yes, Cal, if you're listening, consult with your attorneys. Maybe you can get damages at least, punitive damages to Deshaun Watson. All right, we move along here on a Football Friday, and we circle back to the Astros and baseball. Game six tonight, Minute Maid Park. Game seven, if necessary, tomorrow night. The scariest thing about the next 48 hours for Astro fans, next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.